But mark my words, if Biden wins, I will not be here to stop the chaos I am constantly creating. I have to admit, hearing you cheer is the weirdest part of all this. None of you people have masks, and I thought the troops died for nothing.
I mean, is it worth saving everyone?
I didn't say soldiers were bad, I just said they were losers. I love the troops. That's why I dodged the draft, to give the troops more space to shiver in foxholes.
Oh, I'm so glad I don't have to go on Tapper tomorrow and mop up this geyser.
I'm using your tax dollars to defend myself against rape accusations. Do we love it? We love it.
Trump, Trump, Trump.
Still a good chance white women will f*** this one up again.
Okay, bye-bye forever, nobodies. Dakota was the name of a girl Jeff Epstein introduced me to. Ooh, forget I said that. Oh, no, 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 no. I'm done looking at these piggies in the snout. Speed round time. Drain the swamp. They're coming from the suburbs. QAnon is real.
Empty your airplane toilet on us.
Life with COVID is surreal, but watching crowds cheer the man who brought this hill upon us makes me feel like I'm floating through space. Your thoughts, Vice President Biden?
Wow, wait! I might win this thing!
So your president is not too happy. In fact, I would say I'm angry. And it's because Bob Woodward, okay, so-called journalist, well-known fraud and disgraceful human being, he did one of the most disgusting things a journalist has ever done. In a series of 19 interviews, which were, some were very short, so it was almost like only 14 and a half interviews, real interviews, which is barely any, he recorded me with my consent and then used my exact words to report what I was saying. And it's one of the most heinous. I've never, you like, right, Pence? Okay, well, he's not even there. I'm so down. A great vice president, he isn't even there. He's just watching, I don't know what he's watching, Bohemian Rhapsody for the 400th time. But now our presidency, my great leadership, is under attack. And now they're claiming that I told Mohammed Grilled Salmon, the guy in Saudi Arabia, that he would get a free pass just because I gave him a free pass because I got Congress to leave him alone. And here's what happened. I said, Congress, leave him alone, and they did. And then I talked to Mohammed Grilled Salmon, and he said, if I invited Bob Woodward, we were joking, but he said if I invite Bob Woodward, he could do the same that he did for Kareem Abdul-Khashoggi, the great basketball player who wrote for the Washington Post that, had a little accident, we call it. And he said if I invited Woodward for a series of interviews, he could do he could give him the Kareem Abdul-Khashoggi treatment. And, with the sky hook, remember that? And then I invited Woodward for all those interviews and told him all these things. And he just got away. So, Grilled Salmon, you failed and you're fired.
It's hard to keep track of all the grotesque criminality and sociopathic incompetence of the Trump administration on any given day. Just in the last 24 hours, we've learned that Trump's Department of Homeland Security censored intelligence on Russian meddling in the 2020 election, downplayed the threat of white supremacist terrorism, and distorted evidence to match Trump's lies about Antifa. The Health Department tried to muzzle the government's top infectious disease expert and prevent him from warning the public about the dangers coronavirus poses to children. And on top of all that, the president admitted on tape months ago that he knew the coronavirus was deadly and airborne and confessed that he was lying when he downplayed the threat of a dangerous and highly infectious disease.
It's going to disappear. One day it's like a miracle. It will disappear. The virus. They're working hard. Looks like by April, in theory, when it gets a little warmer, it miraculously goes away. I hope that's true.
Now, the virus that we're talking about having to do, a lot of people think that goes away in April. With the heat, as the heat comes in. Typically, that will go away in April.
China is very, you know, professionally run in the sense that they have everything under control. I really believe they are going to have it under control fairly soon. You know, in April, supposedly, it dies with a hotter weather. And that's a beautiful date to look forward to.
He did know the truth about the coronavirus, and he lied about it. He was aware that it was airborne, that it was deadly, and that it was worse than the flu. He could have easily informed the American people of the risks. Instead, he covered it up, as he confessed to journalist Bob Woodward in the bombshell tapes.
And so what was President Xi saying yesterday?
Well, we were talking mostly about the virus, and I think he's going to have it in good shape, but, you know, it's a very tricky situation. It's
it goes
through air, Bob. That's always tougher than the touch. You know, the touch, you don't have to touch things, right? But the air, you just breathe the air. That's how it's passed. And so that's a very tricky one. That's a very delicate one. It's also more deadly than your strenuous flus.
While he was privately confessing that he knew coronavirus was much deadlier than the flu, he was publicly telling people it was just like the flu and suggesting it could even be cured by a flu shot.
That's a little bit like the flu. It's a little like the regular flu that we have flu shots for. And we'll essentially have a flu shot for this in a fairly quick manner.
A lot of people will have this, and it's very mild. They'll get better very rapidly. They don't even see a doctor. They don't even call a doctor. You never hear about those people, so you can't put them down in the category of the overall population in terms of this corona flu or virus.
You take a solid flu vaccine, you don't think that would have an impact or much of an impact on corona?
No.
Probably none.
And if you're still wondering if this was an intentional strategy to hide the true danger of the situation from the American people, it was, because Trump confessed to that, too.
I think, Bob, really, to be honest with you...
Sure, I want you to
I
be.
I wanted to always play it down. I still like playing it down.
Yes, sir.
Because I don't want to create a panic.
Oh, you didn't want to create a panic? Well, congrats, dude. You nailed it. Aside from a once-in-a-century economic crash that's threatened the health and livelihoods of millions of people, not to mention lines at food banks and fights and supermarket aisles over toilet paper, everybody's super chill. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to go wash my face mask and microwave my mail.
Overnight at a packed indoor rally, President Trump breaking Nevada's COVID restrictions to court voters in the key battleground state.
We're going to win Nevada.
Speaking to a throng of mostly maskless supporters, his first indoor rally in nearly 3 months. The state prohibits gatherings of more than 50 people, but Trump defiant.
And if the governor comes after you, which he shouldn't be doing, I'll be with you all the way.
While those behind the president and in front of the cameras wore masks, most of the crowd did not. But that didn't bother supporters like Mila Christensen, who camped out overnight.
I'm not wearing a mask. It shows that I trust my president.
How are you going to call yourself the president of law and order when you're openly flouting the law? And not even for like a noble reason. No, it's just so that he can spend 90 minutes ranting about how vegetables were invented by the deep state and Hillary Clinton. And this isn't just about breaking the law. What Donald Trump is doing here is actually dangerous. The last time Trump held an indoor rally, he lost 25% of his black friends.
He didn't want people to freak out, so he tried to keep people calm.
Oh, yeah, totally. Trump's the picture of calm and poise. He's spent the last 4 years claiming caravans of migrants were coming to kill everyone and airplanes full of mysterious black-clad thugs were flying cross-country to burn down cities. He's the human embodiment of yelling fire in a crowded theater.
Fire! Fire!
Nearly 100 major wildfires are burning out of control in a dozen western states, and some have turned deadly.
With regard to the forest, when trees fall down after a short period of time, about 18 months, they become very dry. They become really like a matchstick. And they get up, you know, there's no more water pouring through. And they become very, very, they just explode. They can explode.
The age-old question. If a tree falls in a forest and there's no one around to see it, can you convince reporters that it exploded? Trump doesn't believe the problem is global warming at all.
We have to do a lot about forest management. Obviously, forest management in California is very important. And now it extends to Washington and extends also to Oregon. There has to be good, strong forest management, which I've been talking about for 3 years with the state. So hopefully they'll start doing that.
Yes, it's all California, Washington, and Oregon's fault because they won't manage their forests. There's only one small problem. The federal government owns nearly 58% of California's forest lands, while the state owns 3%. It's basically like complaining your neighbor is doing a terrible job mowing your lawn. He doesn't even trim the hedges. And when is he going to do anything about all this weight I've gained? California's Secretary of Natural Resources did his best to cut through Trump's history of global warming denial.
We want to work with you to really recognize the changing climate and what it means to our forests and actually work together with that science. That science is going to be key, because if we ignore that science and sort of put our head in the sand and think it's all about vegetation management, we're not going to succeed together protecting Californians.
Okay. It'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually.
No, it knows. Just because you don't know doesn't mean the science doesn't know the science. Now, it shouldn't be a surprise that Trump is downplaying the devastating fires out west. He spent the last 6 months ignoring a pandemic. And we now know that Trump wasn't just misinformed or stupid. He was lying. Back in February and March, Trump was publicly comparing the virus to an average flu and saying it would just go away by April. But listen to what he told Woodward on February 7th.
It goes through air, Bob. That's how it's passed. And so that's a very tricky one. That's a very delicate one. It's also more deadly than your strenuous flus. So this is deadly stuff.
So Donald Trump knew in February that coronavirus was passed through the air, was much deadlier than the flu. Then he lied about it, and 200,000 people died. So really, MAGA should stand for Make American Graves Again.
Just to be clear, we are taping this. We are back, Mr. President. How are you?
I'm the football guy.
Oh, good. Sir, the election is around the corner, and it seems your campaign strategy has been to ramp up your divisiveness and bigotry, spread misinformation, even disparage the military.
The news is so fake.
Listen, I get it. I was once an aspiring comedian just like you. I posted offensive things for shock value.
It was a disaster.
Calm down. The difference was I was doing it satirically, you know, using irony and exaggeration to point out absurdity, saying and doing things through a persona that I wasn't actually saying and doing. You know, kind of like how I'm not really at the White House with you right now, see? It's just a green screen. But I changed my act when I realized there were actually awful things actually being said and done by actually awful people. Just like you.
Look.
And once I had an actual platform, I vowed I would try my best to use it only for good. Aren't I great?
You know, I'm not sure.
And with November so close, there is one more vow I've taken. Would you like to hear it?
I don't have time.
Raise your tiny hand and repeat after me. I won't
vote Trump.
I won't
vote Trump.
No, there's not a chance in hell.
No, there's not a chance in hell.
I will try to make a difference.
I will try to make a difference.
Cause this isn't going well.
Cause this isn't going well.
So don't waste your bad breath on me. I'd sooner cast my vote for Cardi B. I'll never vote Trump, never vote Trump, never vote Trump. Not me. Come on, sing. I won't vote Trump.
I won't vote Trump.
I will jump through any hoop.
I will jump through any hoop.
And if someone tries to make me.
And if someone tries to make me.
I will throw a can of soup.
I will throw a can of soup.
If there's a chance that I could get this bloated Cheeto off my TV set, I'll never vote Trump, never vote Trump, never vote Trump. Not me. Not I. Girl, please.
But it'll make the country great.
Uh-huh.
Pence will take you on a date.
No, thank you.
What if they manipulate and make you not feel so inclined?
I've made up my mind. I won't
vote Trump.
I won't vote Trump.
To the polls is where I'll drive.
To the polls is where I'll drive.
If I'm 18 years or over.
If I'm 18 years or over.
Cause I'm over 45.
Cause I'm over 45.
So sorry I've offended you. But when it comes to voting, I work blue. I'll never vote Trump. Never vote Trump. Never vote Trump. Not me.
Not me.
Everybody.
Not me. I won't
vote Trump.
I won't
vote Trump.
I don't want another four.
I don't want another four.
And if someone steals my mailbox.
And if someone steals my mailbox.
I will build 100 more.
I will build 100 more.
I won't
vote. without delay.
I will vote without delay.
I will do as necessary.
I will do as necessary.
Just to make you go away. And though I've made some past mistakes, there's one I won't no matter what it takes.
The best is yet to come.
I'll never vote Trump.
Never vote Trump. Never vote Trump.
Not me.
Not me.
Not me.
No, girl.
Not me.
Not me. The news is so fake.
Girl, tell me about it.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Catskill couple Amy Rigby and Reckless Eric have a new song in time for the November election. We've cleaned it up as best we can, but we won't say what the title is.
I've had enough of this.
You sound a little taller on radio.
Tuesday, September 22nd, tune into all sorts of special programming on Creative Community Radio, WGXC 90.7 FM. Catskill's Corey McClasklin has the Forgotten Geek Show at 11 a.m. with entertainment news, music from past decades, special features, and more. Then at noon, Rob Saffer has all kinds of new music on his Overlooked Show, live from Ulster County, with new tracks from Halu Mergia from Ethiopia, the Meriden Brothers from Colombia, Takua Kurata from Japan, Song Jin Chu from South Korea, Micaiah McCraven from Chicago, Maria Schneider from New York City on the Overlook Show from noon to 2 p.m. on Tuesday. Then Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda, the movie review show at 7 p.m., previews the Woodstock Film Festival. At 8 p.m. on Mostly Singles, Michael Wilde plays mostly vintage 45s. This week from Laverne Baker, Billy Strange, Buddy Holly, Tony Joe White, and others on the Mostly Singles show just before Dan Seward beams in from somewhere in Columbia County with the Battlefield Earth show on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Jennifer, thanks for joining me. It's been a while. I think we talked at the beginning of the pandemic when there was a rush of executive orders around voting rights, but it's been a long time.
It has, and a lot has changed since we first spoke.
Well, I'm interested in hearing about it, and I'm sure our listeners are too. We've got an election coming in about a little under 50 days now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of questions that people have about what voting is going to look like in New York come November 3rd. Tell us what you know.
Voters will actually have three ways to vote this year. So for a lot of people, this might be their first time taking advantage of early voting, which we only got early voting last year in 2019. So we'll have 9 days of early voting. We'll have our election day voting as well on November 3rd. And then also this year, we've expanded absentee voting so that any voter who wants to vote by absentee can do so by requesting an absentee ballot and marking temporary illness, which has been expanded to now include fear of COVID.
That's fantastic. Is it too late for people to register to vote at this point?
Nope. There's still a little bit of time to register. The deadline's October 9th. But the problem that we've heard a lot of people facing is that the ways to register to vote in New York State are kind of limited. So, of course, you can do a paper registration form that you would fill out and send to your county board of elections. But our online options are limited only to the DMV. So you can only register online through mydmv.ny.gov if you have a valid, up-to-date driver's license or New York State ID.
And so anyone with a driver's license can jump on the DMV website and register online.
Yes, as long as their license is up to date and it's right at the top of the page on the right side, there is a link for registering to vote.
Now, people might want to do that instead of going to get a physical application because, what, distrust of the Postal Service at this point, how long it's taking for the mail to, you know, get to its destination and come back? What are some of the reasons why you might not want to do a paper registration form?
I think the biggest barrier is probably getting your hands on a paper registration form right now. Usually the League and a lot of other voting rights groups have been out the entire summer. We've, you know, started in the fall back up again as students return to campuses, getting everyone registered that we can. And this year we've been really, really limited in doing that. And not just the League, but all groups that engage in registering voters have been extremely limited in what they can do. So getting your hands on a paper registration form may well be the hardest part of doing it via paper rather than doing it through the DMV. We are sending them out from our office. We get quite a few requests every day, and we do send out those paper forms to people. But yes, I think the concern for the timing with regard to the USPS is a concern as well. But you can always drop those forms off in person at your County Board of Elections office. And you can even go into your County Board of Elections office and fill it out and hand it in person as well.
Is there anything to fear from filling out a physical registration form and mailing it in? So for example, say you mail it in the next couple of weeks and you don't hear anything back. Can you still go to your polling place and vote?
Yes, we always tell people that if you did send in a voter registration form, whether it was through the DMV or a paper form, you can always go vote in person and do what's called either an affidavit ballot or provisional ballot. They're essentially the same things. Poll workers just call them one of those two phrases. So we always tell voters, you know, if you go to your regular polling site and you're not in the book, request an affidavit or a provisional ballot, you'll be able to fill that out and then follow up after the fact to make sure that it's counted with your County Board of Elections. And essentially what the County Board of Elections does is just check and see if they have your file anywhere. They go through any voter registration forms that maybe they got in a little bit late after the deadline. And then, like we always say, make sure that you do follow up because they won't tell you if they don't count your ballot.
Mm. Well, that leads me to the question of if you're not getting anything back from the Board of Elections, you might not know where your polling site is. Can you tell our listeners how they can find out where to go and vote if they wake up on election day and think, I don't know where my polling place is?
Yeah, so the Board of Elections website, which is elections.ny.gov, has a link right at the center of the page that is for the voter lookup tool. And I think it says something like find my polling place or see if I'm registered to vote. It's all the same database of information that will tell you where you can go to vote. And they've also recently started updating it to include early voting poll sites as well. So if you use that tool over the next couple of weeks, they're adding early voting poll sites to there. So if you look on there during the early voting period, you can see what your early voting poll site options are too.
I'm going to come back to early voting in a moment, but The league also has a website where folks can check not only where their polling place is, but who's up for election.
We do, and it is going live in just a couple of days with candidates for president, congressional candidates, state senate, state assembly, judicial candidates, and we'll also have some local DA races and other local races on there as well. And our go live date is the 21st of September, and I'm very excited to be done with this project because we have over like 500 candidates on the site this year because we have so many different offices in New York State that are up for election.
For the Capital Region, is it fair to ask you what some of the hot races are?
Our district attorney race happening in Albany. Of course, the congressional races are always exciting to watch those. And Assembly and Senate seats, they're all up. I think the biggest, hottest one right now is the DA races that are happening around the state, especially because of the Black Lives Matter movement kind of putting more focus on the importance of reforming the criminal justice system. And that really does start directly with our DAs and with our judges. So that's definitely the race to watch. And usually it's kind of hard to get information about DAs and judges. So definitely check out vote411.org if you're interested in reading more about the positions of those candidates.
And you have information about candidates' positions. Now, the league is nonpartisan. How do you get information about what the positions of some of these candidates are?
We directly contact each of the candidates through email. Not every candidate responds, unfortunately, but we do try at the very least to include links to that candidate's Facebook account, their Twitter page, their campaign website. So even if the candidate doesn't respond, there is options to find more information about them, but it's completely up to the candidate whether or not they're going to participate. But yes, everything comes straight from the candidate's mouths.
So back to early voting. Last year was the first year that we had early voting in New York. And I know that for me, I live in Rensselaer County. I live in Lansingburg. And there was a lot of controversy over the fact that there were few early voting sites and they were pretty far away from downtown Troy. What can you tell us about improvements that have been made to early voting sites this time around?
So there will be a Troy site this year, which we're very pleased about because, yes, we were very dismayed that there was no site in Troy last year, but there is one this year. But some counties have added more sites. Something exciting that happened in Albany County was that now any voter can go to any early voting site, whereas last year in 2019, the sites were assigned for early voting. So you had to know your election district and ward, and it was just very confusing. So now in Albany, you can go to any site. Also, some of the sites have changed because they had to follow the new COVID protocols to have a certain amount of space between the machines and a certain amount of space within the facility itself so that they could accommodate enough people while they were having early voting but still have social distancing. So make sure that you do check your early voting site before that you decide to go and vote early. And if you do want to vote by absentee ballot, make sure you do get your request in now. The state just created an online portal, so any New York State voter, regardless of your county, can apply for an absentee ballot online. And that website is absenteeballot.elections, as in multiple elections, .ny.gov, and it's super easy. It takes less than 2 minutes to apply for your absentee ballot. You can also say if you want it sent to another address. That's like the second question they ask is, where do you want this ballot sent? And those ballots are going to be going out pretty soon. Definitely get your request in now so that you can get your ballot as early as possible and get it back as quick as possible. And also remember, if you don't want to put it in the mail, if you're worried about mailing it back, you can drop it off at any early voting or election day poll site. And one of the governor's new executive orders mandates that there be a special line for people who are just going in to drop off their ballot. So you're not going to have to wait in the main line. You'll be able to just walk right up, drop off your ballot either in some sort of box or bag, and know that your ballot is going to be counted and be secure.
If I apply for an absentee ballot and then I change my mind and I actually want to go and vote in person, because that's always exciting, can I not?
Yes, New York State is one of the few states that allows voters to do that. And in New York State, we have a really thorough procedure of vetting all of the absentee ballots to make sure people didn't vote twice. And what the county boards of elections essentially do is that at the end of the election, they compare the absentee ballots they have to the signatures in the poll book to make sure that no one didn't vote in person and vote by absentee ballot. And if you did vote in person, they just invalidate your absentee ballot and count your in-person ballot.
Jennifer, thank you so much for running this down for us, and I'm sure we'll ask you to come back just before the election to give us the most updated information.
Sounds great.
Wake up, wake up, wake up. Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake. This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice. The world's only 12-hour strong man on the air. Here on We Love Radio, 108 FM. The last on your dial, but first in your heart. And that's the truth, Root. Here I am. Am I here? You know it. It, you know. This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy doing the nasty to your ears to the nasty. Eyes only play the platters that matter, the matters they platter. And that's the Taruk Root.
From the heart of Bed-Stuy, you're listening to We Love Radio.
Doing the yin and the yang, the hip and the hop, the stupid fresh thing, the flippity flop. Oh! I have today's forecast for you. Hot! The color for today is black. That's right, black, so you can absorb some of these rays and save that heat for winter. So you want to get on out there, wear that black, and be involved. Also, today's temperature is going to rise up over 100 degrees, so that's a Jerry Curl alert. That's right, Jerry Curl alert. If you have a Jerry Curl, stay in the house, or you'll end up with a permanent plastic helmet on your head forever.
Hi, I'm Brian from Olathe, Kansas, and you're listening to WGXC Akron 90.7 FM.
Sunday, September 20th, tune in to live radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, starting at 8 a.m. with the Reverend Kim Singletary and her There's a Bright Side Somewhere show, live from Columbia County. Neva Wartell is live from Catskill with Music for the Masses, sounds from around the world, from 1 to 3 p.m. on the radio at WGXC. Then the Haitian show Lele Latan is live from Columbia County with Carlene Murphy and Azuka Legba from 4 to 6 p.m. Tony Fallon has the Irish show live from Caro, Greene County at 8 p.m. on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lee Jameson of Stuyvesant, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Transmission Arts Programming, WGXC, 90.7 FM. Grabbable, handleable, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Diane Walden is reporting for the Columbia paper. Copaig Town officials are looking to tax a proposed 500-acre solar facility in Caryville if the project is completed. Under the law, facilities like Hegate Energy's Shepherd's Run project are tax-exempt until the taxing jurisdiction opts out. At its September 10th meeting held remotely via Zoom, the Copaig Town Board unanimously approved a resolution making the tax exemption available under real property law, and I quote, not applicable within the boundaries of the town of Copaig with respect to any solar or wind industry system constructed subsequent to the date of the resolution, end quote. The resolution was made effective immediately. Hegate Energy, a Chicago-based energy company, has proposed the construction of a 60-megawatt solar facility, calling for the installation of 200,000 solar panels on 500 acres within a 900-acre project area located near the County Route 7 State 23 intersection. Most of the land proposed for development is currently being used for farming. Hegate is seeking approval for the facility from the State Board of Electric Generation Sitting and the Environment instead of the Town Planning and Zoning Boards. Prior to the regular meeting, a public hearing was held on revisions to portions of the town code that concerns solar energy facilities. Action on the proposed measure was tabled until the October 8th town board meeting. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Rachel Silberstein is reporting for the Times Union. K-12 schools will continue to supply 2 free meals a day to students through December 31st, regardless of income level or residency, or until funds run out, according to a policy reversal from the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced in early September. The federal agency was responding to pressure from Congress and anti-hunger advocates arguing for breakfast and lunch to be offered free of charge through the end of the school year. Since March, schools have been offering free meals to any child or teenager when buildings were closed down to slow the spread of COVID-19. The Department of Agriculture first said schools should return to the normal restrictions in the fall by only providing subsidized meals to students who lived in the district and met an income threshold. Read the full story in the Times Union. Natasha Vaughn is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Officials in Columbia County are discussing an agreement with towns countywide to host sites for Narcan training. Following a spike in overdoses, the County Department of Health, working with Twin County Recovery Services and Greener Pathways, currently sets up a mobile Narcan station in the area where the overdoses occurred to dispense Narcan kits and to teach people how to properly use them. Under an agreement between the Department of Health and the municipalities, these Narcan stations are now set up at firehouses and town halls. Columbia County Health Department Director Jack Mabb said the program has been successful. Participants are trained and walk away with a Narcan kit, knowing what an overdose looks like and how to handle it. Greener Pathways has between 4 and 6 mobile training events a month. Some are planned events and some set up in response to a spike in overdoses. Columbia County has had 3 spike alerts since August 1st, according to Greener Pathways Program Director Carl Quinn. Columbia County saw a 46.1% increase in deaths attributable to an opioid pain reliever from 2016 to 2017, according to the State Health Department's 2019 County Opioid Quarterly Report. The county ranked 12th in New York State for opioid emergency department visits, with 51 in 2017. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes?
Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Julian Assange and press freedom on trial in London.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. The role of a free press is to hold power accountable, especially those who would wage war. Press freedom itself is currently on trial in London as Julian Assange, founder and editor-in-chief of the whistleblower website WikiLeaks, fights extradition to the United States over an ever-evolving array of espionage and hacking charges. If extradited, Assange faces almost certain conviction, followed by up to 175 years in prison. His unjust imprisonment would also shackle journalists worldwide, serving as a stark example to anyone daring to publish leaked information critical of the U.S. government. U.S. prosecutors allege that Assange conspired with Chelsea Manning, a private in the U.S. Army, to illegally download hundreds of thousands of war logs from Iraq and Afghanistan, along with a huge trove of classified cables from the U.S. State Department. The first disclosure from the massive whistleblower release was a video that WikiLeaks called Collateral Murder. It was recorded aboard a U.S. Apache helicopter gunship as it patrolled the skies over Baghdad on July 12, 2007. The Apache crew recorded video and audio of their slaughter of a dozen men on the ground below, including a Reuters cameraman, Namir Nur Eldin, who was 22, and his driver, Saeed Shema, a 40-year-old father of four. After the initial high-caliber machine gun attack, a van arrived to help the wounded. The Apache crew received permission to, quote, engage the van and open fire, tearing apart the front of the vehicle, injuring two children in the van. Reuters had unsuccessfully sought the video for years. Before long, the New York Times, The Guardian, and Der Spiegel had worked together with WikiLeaks and Assange, publishing stories based on the disclosures. They detailed war crimes committed by U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan, torture at CIA black sites, abuses at the U.S. notorious Guantanamo Bay prison camp, and cynical diplomatic dealings by State Department officials.
It is a clear press freedom case, and the attempts by the Department of Justice to somehow create this as a hacking case when there is absolutely no evidence of any hacking by Mr. Assange, I think demonstrates their desire to move away from the important issues on press freedom.
That's Jennifer Robinson, one of Julian Assange's attorneys, recently speaking outside the London courthouse on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
The First Amendment is understood to protect the media in receiving and publishing that information in the public interest, which is exactly what WikiLeaks did.
The British authorities have kept Julian Assange in almost complete isolation in London's high-security Belmarsh prison since arresting him in April of 2019, dragging him out of the Ecuadorian embassy. Granted political asylum by Ecuador, he lived inside the dark, cramped embassy for over 7 years. When a right-wing president took power in Ecuador, he revoked Assange's asylum and allowed the arrest. Nils Melzer, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Torture, visited Assange in Belmarsh and reported afterwards.
I spoke with him for an hour just to get a good first impression. Then we had a physical examination for an hour by our forensic expert, and then we had a two-hour psychiatric examination. And all the three of us had the same impression, and well, I had certainly an impression that the medical doctors had a diagnosis. We all came to the conclusion that he showed all the symptoms that are typical for a person that has been exposed to psychological torture over an extended period of time.
The conditions in the Belmarsh prison where Julian Assange is being held have only worsened during the COVID-19 pandemic. Assange hasn't spoken publicly in court other than once shouting nonsense in response to one of the many unsupported claims by the U.S. prosecutor. The presiding magistrate threatened to have Assange removed from the courtroom. Experts have lined up to defend Assange, including the legendary Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. In 1971, Ellsberg released the Pentagon Papers, the secret history of the United States war in Vietnam, documenting how successive administrations had lied to the public about the war. Like Assange, Ellsberg provided the leaked documents to the New York Times. Also like Assange, Ellsberg was charged under the Espionage Act, could have spent the rest of his life behind bars. Ultimately, though, a judge threw out Ellsberg's case when it was revealed that President Nixon had ordered criminal break-ins seeking derogatory information on Ellsberg. In a prepared statement in Assange's defense that Ellsberg submitted to the London court, he reflected on the importance of the WikiLeaks disclosures. Ellsberg wrote, "I consider them to be amongst the most important truthful revelations of hidden criminal state behavior that have been made public in U.S. history." Ellsberg added, "The American public needed urgently to know what was being done routinely in their name, and there was no other way for them to learn it than by unauthorized disclosure." Ellsberg elaborated on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
If this trial is successful, if the extradition is successful, already that will have an intimidating effect on journalists around the world and be a direct attack on the First Amendment of the United States.
Many of the war crimes exposed by WikiLeaks, in cooperation with established news organizations around the world, occurred under President George W. Bush. Assange's prosecution began under President Barack Obama. Then Vice President Joe Biden called Assange a high-tech terrorist.
I would argue that it's closer to being a high-tech terrorist than the Pentagon Papers.
President Trump said during the 2000 presidential campaign,
"WikiLeaks, I love WikiLeaks."
Now President Trump wants to lock up Assange and throw away the key. No president of any party should be allowed to threaten the free press. Indeed, it's essential to the functioning of a democratic society. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
Your forecast for the weekend, well, on Saturday, patchy frost before 8 a.m., otherwise sunny with a high near 59 degrees. Saturday night, patchy frost after 3 a.m., otherwise clear with a low of around 35. And on Sunday, patchy frost before 9 a.m., otherwise sunny with a high near 58 degrees. And more patchy frost Sunday night after 3 a.m., otherwise it will be clear with a temperature low of around 36 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Find out where the music takes Asteroid Anxiety on the next Deep Threes, when the producer discovers the tranquility of a dwarf planet, plus sounds from Umber, Matoma, Yuja Wang, and Ramin Djawadi. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Good day, all. This is Michelle Masurgeon for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. And my guest today is Harvey Rosenthal, Chief Executive Officer of the New York State Association of Psychiatric Rehabilitation Services. Welcome, Mr. Rosenthal.
Thank you, Michelle. Nice to be here.
I understand the New York State Office for Persons with Developmental Disabilities, or OPWDD, has initiated cuts to the housing subsidy for disabled persons starting October 2nd. How are disabled persons going to make up this shortfall in their rent payment, and how is this going to impact families who have to support their disabled family members?
Sure. I'm more involved with mental health, so I deal more with the Office of Mental Health, although the circumstances are the same. In the Office of Mental Health, they fund a lot. I think we fund about 40,000 beds, we call them, in New York. Many of them are apartments with rent stipends and staff that come visit people. And yes, those stipends are the ones that come from state monies that are in jeopardy because of the gap. So, you know, there is a threat all across the board, not only to rent stipends, but you name it, schools, fire departments, mental health treatment, mental health, you know, recovery, addiction recovery services, anything that's funded with state dollars. So we're all on the hook right now, waiting to see how things play out in Washington and in Albany. And we're not waiting. I just want to correct that. We are working really hard, advocating, lobbying, doing interviews like this. working together, you know, with the executive branch and the legislative branch. So this is the biggest threat we've had. I've been an advocate now for 25 years, and I've worked in the field for 40, and I've really never seen threats of this size and magnitude at the worst time, during a time when our services are most needed. So
for the short term, if you're a mental health person and you have a case manager, or you're a disabled person, how are these cuts going to impact the operations of these programs?
Well, I actually think in some cases, even though the cuts haven't been, lasting cuts have not been levied, we'll know about that a bit later. But right now we have these things called withholds, which are not actually implemented cuts there, but they're the threat of cuts. They're the kind of cut that says we're going to hold money back, but we'll give it back to you if the federal government reimburses us. But the federal government's at a standstill. So people are sitting there with this impending 20% cut. Some agencies have gone ahead and already cut staff. They've let staff go. They've cut back on services. And I assume the caseloads have gone up, but it'll get much worse. Right now, people are anticipating, they're taking some action, but we haven't been hit with an actual cut. If Washington doesn't deliver the money in the COVID relief package that's the subject of all this, of conflict down there, then the governor could very well turn these withholds into cuts of 20% or more. And that's when we'd really have to go to the legislature and look for support for raising revenues.
So some of the recommendations in raising revenue to offset these pending budget cuts to the most vulnerable would be imposing greater taxes on New York's wealthy residents. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's definitely got to be on the table. There's some very serious money there. I think one of the revenues you could raise from appropriating money from the stock transfer tax is $13 billion, which is the gap. So there's a lot of ways we can approach it, but certainly tax hikes are the simplest. And I think it was yesterday, New Jersey raised their taxes on the wealthy. So where New York is wise to look over the river there and consider the same.
Does New York have a constitutional obligation to adequately provide for New Yorkers with disabilities?
We do here in New York, and I think we've seen the evidence of that. A couple of months ago, there were Medicaid cuts and to hospitals and nursing homes, but not to mental health programs, for that reason. But I think that protection won't hold up and fight off this kind of financial pressure. They will be able. I think the governor will be able to do something here. There's a debate about how much and how much his authority is, and whether his authority is higher than the legislature, because that's the debate that happened this week. The state teachers union sued the governor on this grounds, that he didn't have the constitutional authority, and he backed off imposing cuts in education. So we're encouraged that he'll do the same with us. And that will give us some time, Michelle, to see what happens in Washington. We're told, the election is coming. I doubt that Congress wants to run having cut all these services because they held on to the money in Washington. They didn't supply money to the states and localities. So we're hopefully expecting some sort of a break in the stalemate as the election becomes closer. And so we would hope at that point that we would see the money that would come to New York and that would offset these kinds of cuts.
And if these cuts don't come, because I've noticed that almost every year there's some cut to mental health and disability services. Like, this is really nothing new.
Right.
So with every year there being cuts, are we down? Are these organizations down to their bare bones?
I think they are, but not because so much of the cuts. It's that there have been no increases for so long that the price of doing business and, of operating funds and the price index and things like that. I think we've been faced with cuts, but generally, we work at the legislature and many of them are restored. But the real threat here is the fact that we haven't gotten any increases in like 10 years. So what business is able to operate without an increase for a 10-year period? That's the real threat. That's why we're already, you're right, we're on the edge already. For all these years of a lack of revenue, and a cut is unthinkable. And it's really going to cause such devastation. You see everywhere all the trauma and depression and anxiety and suicidal thinking because of the virus. If we get a second wave, it'll just be even worse. These services need to be in place. The governor has referenced that numerous times, the importance of them. So, you know, we're hoping. He's supposed to give an announcement next week on mental health. We're hoping we'll hear something good.
And what would you like him to say? What?
In the perfect world, I would like him to say that mental health, as you said earlier, in any environment should be exempt from cuts because of the times we're in. And if anything, we should invest, make smart investments. So that's with the ideal. Yes, but what I'd like to see him say is mental health is so important that if I'm going to cut else somewhere, I'm not going to cut there.
So what do you think, you know, families of these individuals, you know, who have children or a family member with a disability and their housing is going to be cut? Are they going to end up being kicked out of their group home, or what happens to them?
I think there is the threat of that. It's not so much the group homes are not much as threat, I don't think, as the stipends for the apartments. The state, between your Social Security disability and a rent stipend, you can afford what often is a high rent. So if you take away the state stipend, then it's not enough to pay the rent. So the families would either have to pay it, I suppose, or worse could happen. I think the crisis in housing is probably the most dramatic impact of the cuts would be that people would lose their homes. And I think that plays very hard with the governor. He did put money in the budget for housing this year. Again, we're counting on him to do the right thing. We're counting on Washington to do the right thing. And then we're counting on him to do the right thing and protect mental health. And not only mental health, but addiction recovery services as well.
I understand they're being impacted at a time when, you know, all these services are at their most highest need, you know, especially harm reduction type services.
You know, there are numerous epidemics. We talk about the COVID, but there's an addiction and a suicide epidemic and an overdose epidemic as well. And so, you know, it's a terrible sort of combination, and we got to stave off the suicides and the overdoses by funding mental health services.
Before we wrap up, do you have anything else you would like to share with our listeners on these issues of the most vulnerable of New Yorkers being impacted?
I would switch a little bit to the terrible crisis that's been caused by the policing that has caused the deaths of so many people, including Daniel Prude up in Rochester. There's a lot of discussion around reinventing the police, not defunding, I think, but transferring the funds to something more appropriate. And so this idea of sending out our proposal right now is that a mental health counselor or peer counselor, someone like myself who's got a mental illness in recovery, a mental health peer counselor with a trained EMT is who ought to go out first, not a police officer. So we're really pushing on that and hoping that in localities are pushing for it and the state should push for it. We cannot, the police, you know, we've trained the police for decades on mental health. It's just not enough and it's not working. We've got to send someone else out who's more appropriate.
Well, I thank you, Mr. Rosenthal, for your time today, and stay safe.
Thank you. You too, Michelle.
Okay. And this is Michelle Masurgian for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. I'm gonna go to the hospital.
Up in the air, up in the air, snapping the knock, up in the top.